Hi, welcome to Power the Forgotten Component. My name is Tom Seaborn. And you know, power is a forgotten component. It's, to me, it's an attitude, a lifestyle. You know, some people exude power. You know, you shake someone's hand and you can feel the power in their handshake. Pete Pansears was an ultra-distance cyclist who had the record across the United States in something like 7 days. And power, and we'll talk about it later, is speed times force, where he was pedaling so fast, his cadence was so fast, but he had such a big gear that he was able to do it faster than anybody else. Well, the bad news is that we do lose fast twitch muscle fibers with age, and those are the type 2B fibers. So we have to keep training them. And when we look at the definition of power, power is speed times force. So think about a boxer. If you throw a punch with just speed, without any force, it's kind of like a flicking jab like Muhammad Ali. But if you throw a right hand, like a right cross, and have your weight into it, that has both speed and force, that's extreme power. And force equals mass times acceleration. So think about, again, a football player moving fast through the line. And weight equals mass times gravity. And, you know, thinking again about a pole vaulter as he barely gets over the bar and then gravity pulls him back to earth. So anaerobic power, it's trying to move very quickly and it's force through a given distance in as short a time as possible. So a lot of the anaerobic sports like tennis, basketball, these are skills based. But we can also transfer it into the gym, you know, where your client works with kettlebells. So they're moving with what we call anaerobic power. And power is the variable on which every limit of performance depends. So, you know, think about golf, or any time you move, velocity is involved. If you're getting out of a chair, you're actually using power. It's not like you slowly, like a weight training, 3 seconds up, 3 seconds down. When you get out of a chair, you use momentum, so that's power. So power can be increased by increasing the speed, which is the rate of force production, and that's like how fast can a muscle shorten under a given load, and then increasing strength, and again, that's where we come up with speed times force. And what we call the rate of force production, Mike Powell, he could do 7 reps on a squat machine in 5 seconds using 650 pounds. So just visualize the amount of power there. And you can see with Sharon Couch and Lance, you know, where it says Lance down at the bottom, we're talking about, again, the speed of the pedals, the cadence, the RPMs, and how much resistance, or in this case, the biggest gear that he's in. And Lance actually kind of revolutionized power, because before him, a lot of the cyclists would be in a much lower gear. And with Lance, he's increased the cadence to the point where he's pedaling at astronomical cadence, like 90 RPMs with a relatively big gear. So, you know, again, even with all of his shortcomings, with all of the scandals, he'll still be known as one of the best revolutionary cyclists, I think, in history. So again, when we talk about power, we're talking about sometimes the least mechanical advantage. Like, you know, let's talk about boxing again. Boxers, they don't rear back before they throw a punch. They go straight to the target. And Bruce Lee developed what's called a 2-inch punch, where he was so fast from 2 inches away, and he was able to turn his body, in other words, be able to use his body weight and transfer it into the punch. So again, speed times force. And, you know, think about it. If a football player gains a lot of weight but doesn't increase his speed, then he may actually lose power. And that's why, you know, coaches don't want their football athletes to gain a lot of body fat in the off season. But what about your clients? They can push a lawnmower. That's a power exercise. In fact, I love mowing my lawn. I mean, I have hills, and so I mow as a power routine, and you can have your clients do the same thing. if they have kids, they can play with their kids, throwing them around, and the kids love that. You can play tennis for power or for leisure. And again, don't think just because your older adult client thinks that they can't do power training, they can. But just like everything else, they have to start slow and progress gradually. But Joe Signorelli did a lot of research on older adult athletes and found that as long as they kept their power training up, then they were more functional even in their twilight years. So what we want to do is to develop force at speeds that the athlete will use in real life or sport. So this is a kind of a touchy subject. Let's say you're trying to improve your client's tennis serve. So you have her do this exercise with a exercise band where it's moving through exactly the same motion as the tennis serve. Well, that's not what we want. We want it to be similar to the motion, but not exactly, because we don't want to mess up the motor programming of our client. We want to increase the client's strength and speed, but not change the motor program. So choose activities that are similar, but not the exact motion. Now, accentuation training is when, like, let's take a good example of a volleyball player. She may not do full squats because, you know, think about a volleyball player. They'll jump, which is kind of a plyometric jump, and we'll discuss later. But she will jump from a position where her knees are only slightly flexed. So a lot of trainers will have these athletes train at angles where the knees are only slightly flexed. So very similar to the sport that they're actually pursuing. So, you know, think about somebody trying to do a one repetition max on a bench press. Even though they're trying to push that weight up as fast as possible, it's going slow. But the point is that they're trying to move as fast as they can. So make sure that your client does all the power moves right after the warm-up. Don't save power training for the end of the workout. You know, do that power training early in the workout, because sometimes agility is involved in this type of training. So research shows that you should do power training about 4 times a week, and if you want to improve, and twice for the maintenance of power. So you'll see a lot of folks, you know, whether it's your clients or other athletes, doing high speed training with a moderate resistance, and that's probably the answer. So that's they're able to move very quickly, and if they tried to do it with a heavy resistance, of course they wouldn't be able to move slow through that. They'd be going very, very slow through that range of motion. So moderate resistance is very good for power training. You'll find that your clients are able to increase the EMG, that's the actual muscle, the amount of muscle activation going on during a maximal contraction with their power, more so than just doing a slow strength move. So in other words, more muscle fibers and motor units are recruited for a power move than for just regular old strength training, 3 seconds up, 3 seconds down. So that means, yeah, we should include some power moves in our clients' training. Another study showed that when we get or discharge more motor units, then that reflex response will be more powerful. And this, again, is great for sports-type activities. So if you wanted a cookie-cutter approach, you'd like to work at 30 to 50% of your client's one repetition max, and that seems to be the best weight or resistance to increase power. A lighter load obviously can be lifted or hoisted more rapidly. So the key is to maximize the load and the speed of movement, but as always, progressing slow with both the amount of weight and the speed. Progress slow and gradually. You'll see a baseball player won't necessarily choose a heavier bat to increase power. The bat needs to be heavy enough to maximize velocity and muscular force. The same as a cyclist is going to find the best cadence, the best RPM with the biggest gear that he can possibly handle. So increasing strength and torque is really good in power, but what you'll find is that for some of your clients who do a lot of aerobics, that seems to hurt power. So let's say your client does her power training early in the workout and then goes for an hour jog. Those two types of activities are at different ends of the continuum, and long, slow distance may actually hurt power. So energy demands also are different whether you're doing power training or whether you're doing a long, slow distance activity. And the energy systems and the neural adaptations. So the goal here is if your client is interested in increasing speed times force, which is power, then maybe stay away from the long, slow distance activities. Many times I'll see baseball players and softball players jogging, and I think, why? You know, what's going on? They're using slow twitch fibers. They're in an energy system that they will never use on the field. They should be training high speed and power all the time, in my opinion. That's always after a warm-up, of course. So periodization is everything. And that means, like we've said throughout all of the lectures, that you start slow, progress gradually, and increase your client's ability to improve force and speed as time moves forward. And it doesn't happen overnight. So beware again that the biggest challenge is your all-around athlete who wants to do everything. You know, they want to be able to jog a mile, and they want to be able to swing a bat fast, and you know, they want to do a lot of different activities using different energy systems and neural adaptation. So if they want to be the, quote, well-rounded athlete, then tell them that to be careful that doing too much of a slow distance move could actually increase their, will decrease their speed and power. So it seems that for the athletes that are trying to do it all, they have to walk that fine line of making sure to do enough power training and keeping the cardio slow distance at bay, not doing too much of that. So as we move forward, there's different tools to develop power. You know, we have dumbbells and barbells, but the problem with that is gravity is involved, and you're going to have an issue there with safety. But Kaiser machines allow you to push as fast as you can through a range of motion without worrying about gravity or inertia. Some of the old training machines, like Universal training machines and Nautilus, those type of machines weren't designed to be moved very quickly, but a lot of people try to, and that's when some injuries occur. The irony with what I was mentioning earlier about where if you do too much cardio training, it could inhibit your power. It seemed like with the increased age of the client and their ability to train, that sometimes they're able to find that fine line so that they don't diminish their power and still do some aerobic training. So when you're training your client, you know, find the right tools, whether it's the machines like the Kaiser machines, or you could use bands, exercise bands, where you can move through a range of motion very quickly. Well, balance is power. You know, think about Bruce Lee and throwing kicks off of one foot. So developing agility type moves with speed times force is an excellent way to make your client a well-rounded athlete. When your client is moving through a range of motion, the antagonist muscle should be relaxed. So, of course, the concentric contraction, there'll be some force behind that, but the muscle that's relaxed, the antagonist, will, if that muscle is contracted, that will inhibit power. An example of that is, go ahead and make your hand into a fist and raise your arm up in front of you. and contract all the muscles in your arm. And now try to bring it across your body as fast as you can. Now, this time, just relax your hand and relax your arm, and now whip it across your body. Boom. So you can feel the difference between a relaxed state and a contracted state. And the relaxed state increases speed, and then at the end of that relaxed move, if you contract the muscles, then you've got the speed times force, which is power. So another point to remember, though, if you have your client always trying to max out on a lift, so they're doing a bench press and they have 175 pounds on the bar and they ask you for a spot and they're trying to do one rep max, and what happens is that when the muscle feels the amount of weight on the bar, and the muscle begins to say to itself, I'm just trying to be graphic for you. The muscle kind of responds by what's called a Golgi tendon organ, which is between the muscle and the tendon, and it says, oh my gosh, this person's trying to lift too much weight. So in order to protect the muscle will automatically relax. And I don't know if you've had that with any of your clients, where your client's trying to lift this maximum amount of weight and all of a sudden completely relaxes and would drop the weight on her if you weren't there to save her. So this is the Golgi tendon organ responding. And we don't want that to be habituated. In fact, try to teach your client not to train to failure all the time, because that Golgi tendon organ becomes habituated, and then she'll learn to just say, oh, okay, Golgi tendon organ kicks in, boom, and drops the weight. So there's, in sports, what we call a power chain, where whether you're throwing a right cross or a reverse punch or whatever you're throwing, it's speed times force, and you do it with a relaxed move. In other words, speed comes from relaxation. And there's a difference between reaction time and movement time. Reaction time is from the time your client thinks of moving till the time she actually starts the move. Movement time is from the time she starts the move until she actually completes the move. So the goal is, again, to increase reaction time and movement time and give them that explosive power and speed. And you want your client to recruit as many muscle fibers as possible for each lift. And like we said before, that includes moving fast, but they're trying to move as fast as they can, but maybe the actual weight isn't moving that fast, but that's still a power move. And, for example, a client might be able to squat her body weight and be able to jump 40 centimeters. And she can maybe squat twice her body weight, and that enables her to jump 80 centimeters. But then, if she squats three times her body weight, the strength alone won't allow her necessarily to be able to jump the 120 centimeters. She may only still be able to jump 80. So it's not just strength that increases power, it's speed. And so we want to have a tremendous muscular contraction, a speedy contraction along with the increase in strength. And the training for power, if you watch power lifters in the gym, and remember, power lifters, they're the folks that want to get a one repetition max. It's true power. So they're spending maybe sometimes 5 minutes or longer between a set of 1 to 3 reps, because they have to get the ATP back, they have to get their central nervous system back before they're ready to do their next rep. And before they train again, sometimes they need a week rest, the whole week rest between body parts, whereas most of us who are training for muscular endurance and strength just require 2 days or so between body parts. You'll see a lot of power training people alternate between heavier and lighter loads, kind of like if you put ankle weights on and walk around with them all day, and then you take them off and you feel more powerful and you're actually able to jump higher. So whether this is just psychological or not, a lot of power athletes use this type of training. And it's the same by when they pair exercises together, and you could do this with your client. For example, a heavy squat with a jump squat, and kind of like what we were talking about with a baseball player, he may put a big heavy donut on his bat while he takes his practice swings to make the bat feel lighter and more powerful for his actual swing. So effortless power, it's kind of like the woman who lifted the car off her child. It's a mind-body thing where she shouldn't be able to lift a car, but you know, all of her muscle fibers are recruited because she knows she has to save her child. And you know, you've heard that we only use 10% of our brain or less, and it's kind of like the same thing with our body, being able to recruit muscle fibers. We want to be able to recruit them at that one moment to, again, lift the car. So sometimes when we know we have to slow down, like let's say you're about to hit a heavy bag, or you know, you're sprinting and you realize you're coming up to a wall, so you slow down. And the key to power training is to not slow down, to be able to go as fast as you can through that full range of motion. So a lot of this is mental. And that's why you see the power lifters preparing for a heavy move. They're going to be mentally preparing for many, many minutes before they actually try to lift. So your client's central nervous system is real important. And being able to synchronize those motor units to get as many muscle fibers involved in that activity to increase the power of the move. And if you look at it microscopically, first the slow twitch fibers, the type 1 fibers, are recruited, and then the fast twitch. So advanced athletes, you know, people who've done this for years, are able to, you know, synchronize that movement so that their explosive power utilizes as many muscle fibers as possible. So we're looking at trying to get as many motor units involved. And you know, when we talk about picking the car off the child, it's more of that mind-body connection. And you know, when hypnosis is used, where you decrease the neural inhibition, so you tell someone when they're under hypnosis that you have the strength and power to lift a car, well, that client or that individual could hurt themselves by trying to do something that maybe is beyond their potential, and they obviously could hurt the back or their skeletal muscle. But you know, not necessarily using hypnosis, but just being able to focus your client's energy into doing something that is within their physical potential, that's what our goal is as a trainer, is to get them mentally prepared for their lift. And, you know, in the literature, they talk about a hidden potential that all of us have. And that if we could get our mind out of the way, then we could do a lot more physically than we think, because our mind inhibits us from actually finishing a lot of activities. In fact, again, I used to be an ultra-endurance cyclist, so I'm very interested in the mindset there. And there was an athlete, Juri Robic, years ago, who constantly was overriding his central nervous system and was continuing on events where his body had nothing left, but his mind kept him going. And so we have to be careful with crossing those barriers, because it can cause injury. So I mentioned this earlier about baseball players, softball players, where, you know, gosh, they have to be careful about if they train slow, they're going to get slow. The muscle fibers, especially the type 2A intermediate fibers, will become slow twitch fibers if they train slow. So if your client's trying to get fast, they should train fast. And if they train slow, they're going to get slow. Now that doesn't necessarily mean to do all of their training on Kaiser machines where they're allowed to lift fast and heavy. They can go ahead, and again, the point is to try to move the weight as fast as they can. Even though it moves slow, those type 2B fibers are being used. So level of activation is very important. And that means get psyched up, get mentally prepared. The heavier the lift, the more you want to get pumped up. If you're just training for muscular endurance or you're stretching, then you want to be kind of relaxed. So again, the mental approach is so important on everything that we're teaching our client. So again, the point is movement before muscle, function first. You know, if we're talking about strength for sports. And, you know, the reason we know all this stuff about being inhibited is that when researchers electrically stimulate the muscle, then they find that there is a muscle strength deficit, that there's this kind of hidden potential, and that people don't use all of their muscle fibers, their motor units, when they attempt to lift. Only when the muscle is electrically stimulated will all those muscle fibers be recruited. So we want to teach our clients to recruit as many muscle fibers as possible, but also to stay safe and being able to stay powerful and safe all at the same time. So whether you're cycling or throwing or jumping, it's all about speed times force. The heavier the person, the lower the velocity. The bigger the gear, the slower the cadence. So again, you know, think about, we want to increase power, and power always has to take into account speed and force. Well, think about it. If you tried to jump without bending your knees, that wouldn't work too well. And we want to take advantage of the stretch recoil reflex. And you've heard of plyometrics. And plyometrics utilizes the myotatic reflex, the stretch reflex, so that when you bend your knees and then explode into extension, then you're taking advantage of the stored elastic energy and the stretch reflex. So this myotatic response allows you to move with power and with speed. And that's why plyometric training is used. And you'll see plyometric training, someone kind of falls off of a bench and catches themselves, meaning they fall to the floor and then they jump higher. And this takes advantage of what we call the stretch shortening cycle, where there's a stretch reflex, the eccentric contraction of the muscle before the concentric. So this eccentric loading and then the exploding through the concentric move. And that's basically what plyometrics is. And you can use medicine balls to increase this plyometric power. And, you know, you catch a ball and bring it towards you and then explode through a range of motion. So this stretch reflex is training this myotatic plyometric power type training that we want to use. So in summation, no matter how old your client gets, remember, they have to propel themselves out of a chair. You know, we don't want them in nursing homes as they get older where somebody's taking care of them. And you want to be able to move through range of motions throughout your entire life that are safe but powerful. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you in the next lecture.